And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Grace Under Pressure. Each of my guests is discussing examples of grace under pressure that they've encountered. My first guest looks at ordinary men in extraordinary circumstances as the final American troops pull out of Vietnam in 1975. We discuss the true story of our final hours in Vietnam from his book, Last Men Out. My second guest explained how great leaders bring out the best in themselves and others from his book, Better Under Pressure. My next guest gives us a complete compendium of manly information contained in the book, The Gentleman's Bedside Companion, so that each of us can be better under pressure. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Tom Cutler is the son of a sex therapist and a sometime Dominican friar. Tom is one of the few Englishmen to have been married in Bismarck, North Dakota. He spent his early manhood in the study of fine art and philosophy at a cloistered university, and he began his professional career with a number of false starts as a teacher, a set designer, a speechwriter, a printer, a toy store manager, a lyricist, and the list goes on and on. Finally, he gave up everything else and leaving the rat race to spend more time with his slippers. Tom is the author of several humorous books, including The Gentleman's Bedside Companion and the bestseller 211 Things a Bright Boy Can Do. He's on the committee of Handlebar Mustache Club of Great Britain, and in his spare time he enjoys murdering Bach on the guitar and staring out to sea. Welcome to the show, Tom. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm very well. I can hardly believe that's me you're describing there. But it's all true. I'm sitting on the south coast of England now, about 60 miles south of London, having a cup of tea, as you might imagine. And as I say, dying to hear what it is I'm going to say after that fantastic biography.
Well, I'll tell you, your biography reads almost as well as the book that you've written. And I think it's interesting. But I want to start with this. You know, on a typical day, we get bombarded with all kinds of useless information through advertising. You know, buy this car, see that movie, smell better. A lot of information is thrown at us. But how did you decide to kind of cut through all that and write a book that cuts through the clutter to get to the heart of what a gentleman needs to know?
Well, that's quite a big question, but I'm going to take a running leap at it and try and answer it. First of all, you have to decide what a gentleman actually is. What do you mean by a gentleman? And I suppose there's a sort of stereotyped idea of what an English gentleman is like. And I read some research recently, excuse me, that women believe that the perfect gentleman is a man who can chop down a tree, play the Spanish guitar, cook a souffle, and then make love all night. It might sound all right, but I think it's beyond most of us. I mean, my bookshelves fall down. I burn the toast. My fingers hurt when I try and play B7. And all I can manage at night time is a bit of sort of superhuman snoring. Anyway, I decided that a gentleman, for the purposes of my book, was simply going to be any fella who was actually able to stand up in the morning and walk around and do his job. And so then I thought, what is it I want at bedtime? When you're horizontal, I've got a pile of books next to my bed about 4 feet tall, on top of which is Martin Chuzzlewit by Charles Dickens, and it's got about 800 pages. That I must have started it, I don't know, 20 times, and I thought, this is no good, because you forget. Next night you fall asleep while you're reading it. You have to go back the next night, you've forgotten who everybody is, and you start again. My wife said to me, here, read my magazine, but it's women's magazines, they're slippery, and the material inside is aimed not at men but at women. I don't want to read page after page of adverts for makeup or how beautiful Tom Cruise is. That's not of interest to me. So I thought, well, what am I interested in? What are men interested in? So I wanted it to be multifarious, that's to say, to cover a whole range of everything that people might be interested in, excuse me. And I wanted it to be funny. Because I think going to sleep in a good mood is important. It helps you to survive, you know, work and all the pressures of being alive in the modern world. But I wanted it to be concise, short, so that you could finish whatever it was you were reading within a couple of minutes. So one or two pages, probably about the longest article in the book, so that by the time the snoring starts, you've got to grips with what it was that you were reading. So that's how I made my decisions, and then I got to and started writing.
A wonderful synopsis of how you came to write The Gentleman's Bedside Companion. We're talking to the author, Tom Cutler. So right off the bat, one of the useful things that I learned from your book is how to open a champagne bottle with a sword. Now, it's very dashing and obviously very dangerous. So as best you can over the radio, explain to my listeners how to impress that certain someone this weekend in opening a bottle with a champagne with your sword.
Okie doke. Well, the first thing to do is, like most of these things, practice. That means buy yourself some cheap, what I refer to as bum's wine. You want some fizzy wine that's not going to cost you a fortune. Go to your local store and, you know, get three bottles of it. And then let me describe the process to you. First of all, don't do this in your living room. You can do it in somebody else's living room, by all means, but don't do it in your own living room because it can make a mess and you can smash your ornaments as the cork and indeed the top of the bottle itself, the top glass part of the neck, the end of the neck, it actually breaks off. But what you do is you take the bottle outside, you take the foil off the top and unwind the wire cage and then slip off the foil collar. Now, every bottle, champagne bottle, has a vertical crease running down it. You've got to find that. And once you've found it, trace the crease down from the fat end down to the skinny end of the neck where it meets the lip, the little blob that sticks out. Because you're now going to take your sword and you're going to take your sword out of its scabbard and slide it down the bottle. I know what everyone's thinking. I haven't got a sword. So if you haven't got a sword, get yourself a largish kitchen knife and use the blunt end of it to slide down the crease that I just described hard onto the lip. And when it hits it, you need to do it with a certain amount of force. When it hits it, it'll pop off. Point it in a sort of 45-degree angle towards the sky, avoiding your neighbor's cat and your grandmother who's hanging out the, you know, the laundry. Whack it hard, and the end, the cork, including the glass around the top, will be forced off by the pressure, and you'll get a very clean break, and you can then pour the wine into a glass. And I've done this several times now, and it's very drinkable. However, I would say, just for the purposes of safety, while you're practicing, wear a full suit of armour, and don't try drinking it.
All right.
That's basically what you do.
That's wonderful, useful information from Tom Cutler, author of the book, The Gentleman's Bedside Companion. I love the different chapters in your book. One that obviously just piqued my interest was the one that you've titled Intercourse with Aliens. You provide valuable pickup lines, useful pickup lines in a variety of different languages. What are some of your favorite pickup lines in other languages that are guaranteed to charm the other person that's hearing them?
Yes, right. Well, this was really an antidote to the sorts of books that you pick up in the bookstore with, you know, the foreign dictionaries. When you're going on vacation, you're going to, say, Italy or Germany, you're going to somewhere in Europe or wherever you're going, you pick up a book because you don't speak the language, and it's always full of the most useless stuff, beyond how to get a hotel room and ask what time the train leaves the station. Then it often I find these things are of no use at all, so I thought, well, what you really want, often what you want, is, you know, it would be very useful to have a folded slip in your pocket or the dictionary itself with pickup lines. Or, indeed, I've included a foreign insult dictionary. That's just, you know how often things go wrong on holiday and you want to vent your spleen. Well, I've done that too. The Portuguese ones that I include, I won't attempt, if you don't mind, reading out these in Portuguese because my Spanish is bad enough and my Portuguese is worse, but I included such things as, would you care to view my etchings, which is, you know, polite, and your place or mine, which is short, something like tua casa ou minha, I think you pronounce that, and I did also include take your clothes off, should you prove to have success. But, you know, on the insult front, which is possibly I could use more often than than the pickup thing. But I am you know, getting old now. I quite like shut your mouth, which in French is ta gueule toi, with an exclamation mark. And has your nose always been like that? Which in German is war deine Nasenschimmer so, I think. That's my best guess. And keep your hands to yourself. Tenga la mani a posto in Italian, and a simple one, jerk, which, you know, I would never actually say to anyone, but it's there in case anyone wanted to say it, and I've got all the main European languages for that, because everybody swears in the same way under pressure. And I know you talk about being graceful under pressure, but if you can swear at someone in their own language, they will think you're very polite.
And that's the type of useful information that contained in The Gentleman's Bedside Companion by Tom Cutler. We're talking to the author. Tom, now, one of the things that I also found amusing is that you believe that the banana is proof of God's existence. How so?
Well, what happened here? I was approached at a... I'm always interested in people's what people have to say. This isn't really a thing about what you think about God. This is a thing about how silly people can become. Someone told me at a party that the banana is a proof of God's existence, and I immediately thought, well, what about the Grand Canyon or a beautiful woman? That would be a much better example. Nonetheless, I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, for example, the banana's skin has been designed to tell you whether it's ready to eat. You know, green means it's too early, yellow's just right, and black is too late. It's like a natural traffic light. He said it's designed, it's ready to tear, convenient, it tears along with special ridges, and when you peel it, its skin is designed to hang naturally over your fist. It's even made pointing towards your mouth, and it's just the right size to go in your mouth. He said, but ultimately the banana, he said, is soft and sweet. It's got no nasty seeds. It's ideal for eating, even if you're a baby or a toothless old man. And I, at first I thought, yes, it's quite impressive. And then it occurred to me that, well, actually, you can't really say that a banana is pointing at your mouth. It only points at your mouth if you hold it that way.
Right.
And then it also occurred to me that, all right, it does tear conveniently down its ridges. But if that's supposed to show intelligent design, all I can say is coconut. You know, try getting one of those to open, or pineapples. And, you know, the skin does hang down nicely, but not if you're eating it in bed. And it's the ideal shape for the human mouth, but so is the death cap mushroom. And it also occurred to me that it's the ideal shape to put in all sorts of other places, which I didn't specify. But the one that really did it for me... soft and sweet, it certainly is, but if it's intelligent design, it's intelligent human design, because the dessert banana we're used to is actually a human cultivated species. The natural banana is about four inches long, thick, with a hard green skin, and it's full of nutty, hard seeds. It's very sour, and it's over thousands of years the banana has been crossbred and bred into the delicious, sweet dessert banana we're used to. So while I was researching this, I discovered some interesting things I didn't know before. And I've tried to include in the book a number of Hey Pat moments, so that, you know, on every other page, I hope there's a Hey Pat moment. That's when you're in bed, you're reading, and the person next to you, in bed next to you, has nodded off or just dozing off, and you nudge them with your elbow. You can't resist. You say, Hey Pat, did you know that 11 seconds, no, that a million seconds is 11 days, but that a billion seconds is 33 years.
Wow.
So it's full of information which is not world shattering or world changing, but is interesting, diverting, and I hope sometimes chucklesome as well.
It is very much so. We're talking to Tom Cutler, author of the book, The Gentleman's Bedside Companion. And Tom, we're talking about being gentlemanly. Probably no modern symbol better exemplifies masculinity than the remote control. I mean, it's a symbol of man's control over his environment. Most men, when they have the remote control, it has to be pried from their cold, dead hands before they'll give it up.
Yes.
How do you, what's the secret that you reveal in your book about finding the remote control when it's lost?
Well, finding your remote control, there are different types of remote control, and I've also, I've listed those in the book as well, with illustrations of different kinds, different styles of remote control. But really, this was the thing about new man behaviours. You know, you've heard of new men. They're supposed to, I don't think there's anything, it occurs to me that men are no better now than they were 50 years ago at sewing, for example. And try though they might, they remain stubbornly male. And hanging on to the remote control is one of those things that indicates that you are the man. And people, I'm sure men don't do it on purpose, but they do it, no doubt. They hold on to the thing. I mean, in the old days, you had to get off your bottom and walk across the room and change the channel with your finger. Nowadays, you don't need to do that.
Well, that was the reason, Tom, that you had children, so that you could send them across the room to change the channel on your behalf. So that was the original remote control.
Exactly. Well, I was trying to point out that you should be polite and pass the thing. If a woman, you're watching the Super Bowl or something, and a woman asks to see what's on the other channel, you have just point out to her kindly, excuse me, I'm the head of this household, this is my television, I'm watching it, and you can watch your programs later. And I said, as she vacuums around you, it's always polite to lift your legs, and, politeness costs nothing. Now, someone said to me, this sounds like sexist rubbish. And I said, well, it's a joke. Again, I think men chuckle. We all recognize in ourselves, especially if you are, as you say, a gracious person, you recognize your faults and failings, and there's little small things you can do to appease the poor woman who has to live with you.
Very well said. We're talking to Tom Cutler, author of the book, The Gentleman's Bedside Companion, a compendium of manly information for the last 15 minutes of the day. Tom, if people like your stories, if they like what they hear, they want to learn more about you or about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you can pop down the town to the bookstore. They've got piles of them down there, I'm told. If you don't want to exercise your legs, you can exercise your finger and go online. Just go onto Amazon or Google my name or the book's name. It will take you straight to Amazon, and you can get it a bit cheaper that way.
And you can also get it at our own Bank of Books here in Ventura. Two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street. Tom, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.